Welcome to San Diego Magazine's Happy Half Hour, and this week we are sponsored by the San Diego Bay Wine and Food Festival. The Bay Wine and Food Festival returns November 11th to the 14th, featuring domestic and international wines, craft beer and spirits, local culinary legends, and iconic restaurants. The epic grand tasting takes place on Saturday, November 13th on the stunning Embarcadero with celebrated chefs, incredible food and wine, live music, and more. Tickets are available at sandiegowineclassic.com. Arrive at awesome! And we're also sponsored by the San Diego International Film Festival. The 20th anniversary of the festival kicks off in Balboa Park on October 14th and runs through October 24th. Live screenings and events will take place at beautiful locations across San Diego, including the Museum of Photographic Arts and the San Diego Museum of Arts in Balboa Park, the Catamaran Resort Hotel and Spa on Mission Bay, and downtown on the USS Midway. The festival's 20th anniversary year also features one of its most robust slates of highly anticipated studio films, including Come On, Come On, Spencer, The Lost Daughter, Belfast, and The Power of the Dog. Festival attendees have the opportunity to check out the films that have the attention of the industry before anyone else, some of which will certainly go on to Oscar nominations. Get your tickets at sandiegofilmfestival.com.
And for all of you out there, come join me on Sunday at the Catamaran for the culinary cinema, basically the culinary part of the International Film Festival. And we're basically doing a 3-star Michelin story epic journey film. And then we're having food and we're having chefs and everything else. And we'll just kind of, you know, sit out there and get some post-pandemic suntanning going on and, you know, eat some food and stare at, you know, people prettier than me on the bay. You know, I mean, that sounds really creepy. Actually, I need to shut up now, but yeah, it should be good.
Well, speaking of Michelin stars, we are honored and blessed today to have Chef William Bradley from Addison on with us again, who just got his second Michelin star. Congratulations and thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks everyone for having me. I'm always honored and happy to be here and discuss all those good things.
Well, let's jump right into hot plates. And so I'm sure many of you probably have heard that Rolling Roots food truck burned down a couple weeks ago, and we just wanted to provide an update.
So Avante Hartsfield, the owner of the truck, he set up a GoFundMe campaign. And he received a lot of community support over the past week. He needs 100K to rebuild the truck. And in about 4 days, the community rallied and raised $80,000 for him. And Troy just checked this morning, and the campaign is now up to $91,000. So that's just short of goal. And also last week, Sequan Casino gifted him with 20K. Avante has been very open on social media and the GoFundMe page that before the fire happened, his business was vandalized and broken into, and he details what he experienced, and he says that they are a series of hate crimes. Avante is a Black and LGBT business owner, and he has talked to the police, and last we checked, the police and the fire department are still investigating, and he has also been posting updates on his social media, on his Instagram, and on the GoFundMe page as to where that's at. But this does end on a good note that Avante didn't give up, that he's just charging forward, and that the community really rallied behind him. And he will be able to continue his business thanks to everybody helping out.
Yeah, I think this is an amazing show of a community supporting a local business owner. You know, watching this whole process evolve, you know, I was glad to see not only the media, but just, you know, random people sharing, you know, on their social media, you know, rallying money for somebody and showing up. And obviously when there is, you know, as Avante said himself, you know, there's racial overtones and, you know, to, you know, some of the damage is done. Obviously, this is his words, you know, and it's, the investigation's pending, but you know, it's just, there's no place for that in our, you know, in San Diego. And I love whenever something like that happens, you know, you hate to see that ever happen, but when you see the response and you see so many people being, you know, kind of just saying, we won't tolerate this. We're going to get this guy back on his feet. You know, we're going to raise as much money as we humanly can in the next 20 minutes, the next hour, the next 4 days, the next week, next 2 weeks. We're going to show up again and again and again. You know, and seeing that money go up and up and up immediately just redeems your faith in humanity. It just, you know, it's one of those things where you're just like, man, I can't believe this racist crap is happening in the city that I love. You know, I can't believe that I coexist with this kind of animosity and hate and ignorance, you know? And then once you see that number keep on going up, I was, for me, that was my endorphins and that my like faith being restored. It was like my faith in humanity got plugged into a wall, you know, and it just started, the battery kept on going up and up and up as soon as that number went up and up and up. So Avante, you've been on the show. We wish you the best, my man. We obviously helped spread the word as well. And we, you know, hope that he gets back on his feet, gets his place open, and we will all be there day one. And good people win, you know?
It also just shows like karma, you could say. I mean, during the shutdown, he was giving away so much food, or people just pay what they want. So it's just like showing, it's like, you know, no good deed goes unturned, you know? So yeah. I love to see that, because I'm sure it's some of those same people that he gave food to are the same people that contributed.
Yes, the way that the story ends also made me feel better and restored my faith in humanity. Troy, I think your analogy of something being charged, being plugged into the wall and the energy going up, I think that was a great way to explain it.
Yeah. Thank you. So we have some great news in South Park where Hamilton's Tavern was. It's going to be turned into a new pub. I'm super excited about this.
It is. So the owners of Bottlecraft are going to turn the space into a pub called Buck. Brian Jensen, the owner, told San Diego Beer News that the landlord said that he wanted them to bring back, you know, the same vibe and feel that Hamilton's had. And they plan to do that to keep it as a neighborhood space. And they're going to offer beer, ciders, and wine, along with a in-house food concept. And it's estimated to open in the second half of next year. And it sounds like the beer community, people who live in South Park, everyone just really supports this and is looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, I haven't, you know, done a physical inventory of the owner's morals and business tactics, but every hearsay that I hear about the business owner of Bottlecraft is good news. Is that's a good dude doing business who cares, you know, about his people, about the neighborhoods that he's in. South Park is obviously one of our favorite spots in San Diego. I mean, you've got you know, my favorite Kindred over there. You got, you know, a bunch of different places, and it's just getting better and better and better. It's always kind of been like the small little offshoot of North Park, and North Park had all of this cool stuff, and South Park got little sprinkles here and there, you know, and now it's getting even more. And to see that Hamilton's, which was a legend, and then fell on hard times, and, you know, and obviously there needed to be new blood that came in there. I'm glad to see that that's a new blood that came in.
I just love Bottlecraft so much too. Slightly off subject here, but one of my favorite like little like date things you can do, this is kind of like a two people, $50 almost, but go to the Bottlecraft that's in North Park, and they have a Venissimo cheese in there too. You get a beer, you get a drink, and then they make a cheese board from Venissimo that accompanies your beer. Super, super fun.
Nice.
Off subject, but I love it.
Okay, not good for a lactose intolerant person. So, okay, that's good advice that I will not be going there on date night.
Your date night would go terribly wrong.
They do have a great selection of cured meats, though, too. So you just swap those out. All right, let's catch up on some neighborhood news. Matsu is open in Oceanside.
Yes, they are. And they opened at the end of September. And just a quick reminder, this is Chef William Ike's modern Japanese concept. So he ran this as a pop-up for 2 years before finding a permanent home for it on South Tremont Street. And this is in the Flying Pig's old location. So it's open just for dinner service, and it's a tasting menu. I looked at it online, and it says there's four courses at $65 a person. And you can also do an experience where everyone at the table participates in the tasting menu to get multiple courses for $140 per person. So this, I've been curious about this space for a while, and I've been wanting to go, but I'm happy that they have a permanent location.
Yeah, I mean, William Mike has been one of those chefs that I always get the scuttlebutt about chefs. People like to email me and be like, "Hey, jerk, have you tested this chef out yet?" I'm like, "No, I'm one guy. I'll make it across the city. I swear to God, I'm coming up. Yeah. I'm gonna go to Oceanside soon. I promise." Like, then they'll text me like 27 minutes later. Hey, jerk, have you done it yet? This was William Ike for me. Everybody in the Oceanside scene would always email and say, "Dude, you have to go try his food." And I have, and I did, and I've had his food in multiple different places. Guy is so talented. He gives a damn about the cuisine too. He's really passionate about it. He's really he's obsessive about the Japanese food that he's cooking. So I think that this is going to be, should be a really, really, really good restaurant. And I will say this, 4 courses for $65, while that may sound, obviously, money is relative to everybody. There's some people that would be at the end of the world money, but for $65 for a high-end chef like this for 4 courses is really inexpensive. It could easily go up to 80, 90, that sort of thing. So, I think getting in now, while it's $65, is a really, really good thing. And I love to see that the original Flying Pig is still alive. Like that space is still alive, because that was kind of Flying Pig kicked off. Not kicked off. There was other restaurants in Oceanside, but Flying Pig catapulted it to a new level from that space. And the fact that their friend William Mike is doing matsu in there is awesome. And Flying Pig, as we'll talk about later, moved down the street.
Can't wait to try it out. And that is your hot plates for this week. Marie does put up a blog post on sandiegomagazine.com every week, going into more detail about all of this. And just as a reminder, we want to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions for us? Need any restaurant recommendations? Or is there a guest you want to see on the show? Or if you want to sponsor this podcast, like the San Diego International Film Festival, let us know. Give us a call at 619-744-0535 and leave a voicemail. Or if you want, you can also shoot us an email at happyhalfhour@sdmag.com. And also, as a reminder, if you love this podcast, please support San Diego Magazine by subscribing at sandiegomagazine.com. This week, we have a very special guest. We're excited to have Chef William Bradley of Addison on the show. In case you missed it, Addison was recently elevated from 1 Michelin star to 2 stars a few weeks ago for the 2021 edition of the Michelin Guide to California. We had Chef Bradley on the show in January of this year, and we're so excited to have him back on. Congratulations.
I mean, this is huge. I mean, this is really big. I would imagine, it's been, I think that it was deserved the first time around, to be quite honest with you. I think we all talked about it when Michelin came to San Diego and they, first started kicking the tires in our city. I think it was, a couple of years ago. I think that when we saw you get 1 star Michelin, we were like, that's great. I mean, we're just happy that, there's attention being paid, but I think all of us said, to the amount of attention and obsession and and the food quality and everything else, we felt that you guys deserved 2 stars at the time. So I think it's a little bit overdue. Does it feel good? Does it feel like, does this feel right?
It's been a long process and an amazing journey. It feels really, really nice. It does, but it's just the beginning. Obviously, the way we look at it and the mentality that we have at the restaurant, we have a little thing on the wall that we look at every day. It says 2 down, 1 to go.
So. Right. What was the best call? Not the best call. I mean, I'm sure you got a lot of calls, and every single person that congratulated you is worthy and you love and respect. But was there somebody like a former mentor or somebody that reached out and was like, you had a special moment with when this happened?
I think the most special moment, I think, was to see, my kids and my wife. The work that we've all put in. Mm-hmm. My wife has such a huge impact on what I do and pushes me all the time. I think if my wife, in terms of how she critiques my food, is by far probably harder than any Michelin inspector would be on what we do. So. I think it was to see their reaction, like, well done. I think that was big for me.
That is,
and some of the funny ones were like, hey, dude, I can't get into your restaurant now for like 4 months. Do you mind? Like, old friends, things like that. It's kind of funny. Will I ever see you again? You know, these like, oh, should I put a message in a bottle? And those are all funny, but at the end of the day, I still remain very humbled in what I do.
The family is so special too, because we know how much chefs work. I mean, especially when you're, look, I mean, the amount of time that you have to put into that restaurant. I mean, and not to say that a mom and pop who's not going for a Michelin star doesn't work their tailbones off. And I'm sure we know they do, you know, but a chef's life, period, a cook's life, you know, is not 8 to 5. It's not check in, check out. You're working Saturdays, you're working holidays, you're working, you know, like birthdays, you're working that sort of thing. You know, I mean,
that was really great to see their reaction. I mean, there, you know, my one daughter, I posted this on Instagram months back, but she was playing restaurant in her room and she wanted me to come critique. And when I walked up to her room, she had drawn these Michelin stars and posted them on, it was 2 stars on her room. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to be rubbing off on these kids like this. They need to stay away from the business. But anyway, when I walked in, and the funny thing was, she basically told me like, hey Dad, sit down. I need you to go over the menu with you, cause we're going for 3 stars. So that was like the funniest thing I've ever heard. And it was very touching, because once I got the second star, she's kind of looked at me like, okay, good. You caught up to me now. So kids are just the best.
That is the best. Wait, how old is she?
She's 8, but it was both of them. It was both of them. So they're 6 and 8. But the 8-year-old had it on the door, and the 6-year-old was the one putting the food together. It was just, it was pretty cool.
She's like, you know what I'm getting here in the terroir? I'm getting top notes of my salary just went up. I mean, my allowance just went up, you know, getting top notes of a raised allowance, Dad.
what did they serve you for playing dinner? What is their specialty?
Cause they would hear me. I have a tendency to kind of, you know, I can think of food in my head and I write things down, or, you know, say things to my wife about combinations of flavors. So I think it was something weird, like caviar with like lime, lemon, lamb jelly. Like they were just making things up that they had heard over the years. It was just, it didn't sound very interesting at the time, but it was pretty funny.
These could be the next evolutions to help Addison go from 2 stars to 3 stars. If you like, you know, the caviar, lime, lamb jelly. I mean, it sounds like a hit to me.
Yeah, but I try to keep them out of what I do as much as I can. I think that's one thing that I think I've done in my career quite well, is I keep the restaurant and what I do kind of separate.
I spoke with a chef the other day who knew exactly the process that you need to do in order to get a 2-star Michelin. He said, if you call them, they'll actually walk you through it. And I don't know if you know if this is true, or do you know the process, and what do you need to do to get to that second star?
You know, I really don't pay attention to the methodology as much as I try to just drive to be different at the restaurant. I don't look at like, you have to cook within a box, or you have to have certain this or certain that. I think that's just a myth. And a lot of chefs say that, believe that, or are interested in that. I mean, for us, I think we just focus on what we do best. And if we are, you know, granted more Michelin stars, I think it's just, you know, it's just a good testament to the work that we do and what we believe in. So that's our methodology. You know, we've always stuck to that, you know, and I think we've evolved a lot over the 15 years, and we stay extremely relevant. And I think we're being recognized for that now, because as you alluded to in the beginning, this is huge for San Diego. I mean, to have a 2-star Michelin restaurant and multiple Michelin starred restaurants now, with some of our other restaurants receiving stars as well. This is really, really big, because this puts us on the world stage. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to benefit us all in so many ways, with, you know, bringing more talent to San Diego, keeping the talent that we have here, and just, you know, keep it moving in the right direction. It's very positive.
Yeah, I mean, you think, let's talk a little bit about the evolution that you mentioned. You know, how has Addison evolved? I mean, you really have made some changes over the last couple of years. And I imagine that the pandemic, like most restaurants, you know, you had to take inventory and you had to say, what are we really about? You know, how can we change this process to make sure that we're not so vulnerable in the next kind of breakdown like this? And what do we really want to be? It seems like all of us, whether you be a chef, a restaurateur, a writer, an editor, you know, a plumber, you know, we all took that big, what do we really want to do in life? And I know that you guys made some changes. How did you guys evolve?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what I mean by evolution for us, I mean, we all went through the pandemic and had it as that bad word pivot. Mm-hmm. We all went through that and take out and, you know, kept everything moving forward. But in terms of evolution for us, we feel that now with having two stars, there's a bigger responsibility for us. By doing so, you know, we really want to dare to be even more different than we have ever been. And that puts us down the path or something that we've embraced over the last few years and kind of our ethos now is California gastronomy and how we kind of take some of the flavors and cultures of where we are and more regional focus to make Addison different than everyone else. Because I don't feel, you know, you're talking about methodology of Michelin. I don't feel that if we continue down the path of doing contemporary French cuisine, we would ever be awarded a third star if that ever happens. You know, if your restaurant is worthy of a journey, you can't be doing dishes from someone else's playbook.
Somebody else's playground. Yeah.
Right. So we felt that we've kind of moved into a more of an exciting, more of a challenging time for us. It's really, really exciting. So, you know, at our level and at, you know, we're really focused and obsessed with what we do. So we haven't really changed much.
Right.
In that sense, we're still very, very focused on what we do.
And what, in terms of how you changed from, I mean, obviously there's French influences because that's your background, but you say you can't just do a French restaurant. You changed more to California, you know, cuisine. What is that change? I mean, are we talking like you lean on the mother sauces and things like that, and then all of a sudden you basically take the bounty of here and you just play with that and you make that your focus. What do you mean specifically?
Yeah, specifically, I mean, obviously French technique is trickled down into all different types of cultures of cooking. So the technique is there. It could be a very, very intense technique. It could be something very light. But I think, you know, talking mother sauces, I mean, we've moved away from the shawls of that French heaviness. You know, we look at, you know, again, where we're at in terms of the cuisine being very light, feminine, approachable, you know, a lot of texture in our dishes. So we've focused on that. And if you look at our culture in Southern California, we have so many different influences. You know, it's, it could be Filipino, it could be, you know, Italian, it could be Japanese. I mean, we have so many of those. So it's kind of fun to kind of tap into some of those resources and take those elements of taste and apply them to our aesthetics. And it can, you know, you're creating your own voice. And I think it's, you know, it's been cliche over the last few years to have something that's really regionally focused, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it's very rewarding to see how different we've changed in a very positive way.
Now you're a San Diego kid.
That narrative has never really played out that much, but to be from here, I moved away for a number of years, never thought I would come back, but to get two stars in the place that I was born and raised is pretty special.
Hey, why did you come back? I mean, how big is this for you to help be part of the team? And I know you're the leader of the team, but I know also that you have an empathy and a humility about you that you would never take full credit. But I mean, to lead that team that gets a two-star Michelin in the place that you were born and raised, I mean, you know, why'd you come back? How big is this for the city?
Yeah, I mean, at the time where I was, 15 years ago, I thought my next step would be, you know, I had multiple offers in New York, a couple in the Bay Area. So I was going to move to one of these big, big cities with food. And then when I was approached with the layout of what, you know, the vision of the Grand Del Mar at the time and having a standalone style restaurant, what they were looking to do, I was a firm believer behind the project at the time that we could really, I mean, at least at that time being kind of get in there, see what we could do, see how we could evolve, see how the community embraced us. And, you know, and here we are now. And it does mean a lot. I mean, I think the day that the stars were announced, I mean, I got messages from people I haven't talked to in a long time. So it was really cool.
They're like, actually, I'm your biological father.
It was just wild, the people that came out. I mean, it was so cool to see, you know. It's a very humbling thing to me, you know, to see a restaurant of this level and to be able to do it in your own backyard, per se. It was a lot of fun.
What was the exact moment that you found out? How did you find out?
They called and let us know.
Okay. Were you standing with your staff? Were you in the kitchen? Yeah.
Well, I was standing kind of by myself, and then my staff kind of saw my reaction, and they thought, "Holy shit, something's going on here." But we were all just, you know, fingers crossed. I mean, we were very honored at the time to get one stars. I mean, mm-hmm. one star is still extremely difficult to do. I know yeah. people might look at the star system differently. A one-star Michelin restaurant does high level quality food. I mean, it yeah. could be, you know, I think people are misled sometimes. I mean, because there's a bistro, and then there's like fine dining, and then there's a noodle shop, and then there's a taco place like Taco Maria. So people mm-hmm. kind of, they're a little bit misled with that. But, you know, the quality that you have to even have one star is tremendous. So to move the needle from one to two, you have to really start to look at how you're doing your food differently. And I think we were very honored at the time. And it was the best thing that could happen to us, because a lot of our followers, a lot of the people that patronized the restaurant, you know, for many years would compare us, "Oh, you remind us of, you know, Fronson," or "you remind us of mm-hmm. the level Madison Park," or "this was in line with Single Thread," or, you know, all these things that people say. So, you know, for a while they're like, wow, that's nice. But then when we received one star, we were very honored and excited for that, because I love the chase. You know, mm-hmm. I love that feeling, the cadence of going for something that's bigger than you. And I thought it was the best thing that could happen to us, because it made us really shed our skin. You know, we didn't want to feel comfortable. So some people, you know, with all due respect, that get one star feel comfortable in that, and that's yeah. their business model, and I respect that. Yeah. But for us, that was like, it was time for us to shed our skin and move in a different direction. We look at it like it's like climbing Mount Everest. Mm-hmm. It's not for everyone, and the ones that want to hunker down and do it, it's a challenge.
Sure. I mean, a one-star Michelin, you've gotten a third of the way up the mountain, you know, yeah. you're like, okay, can I go on? How much oxygen do I have? You know, do I have enough, you know, people in my group that can set the spikes and get me to the next level?
Right. And I have some people that have set the spikes with us that, you know, my chef de cuisine has been with me for 13 years. My sous chef's been with me for 10. My dining room manager has been with me for 9. I mean, in the core, we're very, very tight.
Yeah, I would imagine you guys can kind of speak an ESP at that point in time. But you said, you know, for some people, one-star Michelin is a perfect level for them, you know, and that makes sense. I mean, that's what people want, you know, and then some people want to go to two, some people want to go to three. There's also the opposite. Like, there was a story that came out in, I think there was a San Jose restaurant, I forget which one it was, that he had all of his stars removed and he was very happy about it. And we've seen this before. We've seen Michelin star restaurants like say, "Please take all my stars. I don't want them anymore." But there's and that's not because they don't like Michelin. It's not because that it's a negative thing. It's because the pressure, right? I mean, what kind of pressure comes with this? How does it change you?
It does. It does. I slept a little bit better at one star. I don't know what's going to happen if we ever get to three, but no, there's pressure is what you put on yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. Again, I think for us, what this has done is it's given us more confidence than pressure. Yeah. You know, I mean, we are all as a society under so much pressure. I think that's the problem. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, what I've told my staff now is, there was a lot of hard work to go from one to two that we've done. Let's enjoy two to three.
Mm-hmm.
Let's enjoy it. Let's enjoy the process. Let's enjoy, you know, the whole thing. Let's smile our way to three instead of grind and the misery that some people might think that it is. We're not taking that approach. Let's enjoy this. And this doesn't happen often.
Can you give me an example of what the kind of impact that it makes on a restaurant? I mean, did you see the reservations go out for 3.5 years? Are you booked through 2028? And did you have 1400 resumes come into your email inbox as soon as this happened? What happens?
I can put it to you this way. We're doing really well. Really well. Which again, like I said, we sat around and we were like, thinking, like, okay, if we get elevated, we really, really need more restaurants to get one star. Mm-hmm. Like, we're championing this, because if we were to move and no one else moved, it would just, I don't think it would be a positive light on the city. Yeah, it could have been a positive light for Addison, but for the city. So when we elevated one more up and then a few more, I was just like, this is great, because now people are going to come here, you know, talk about business model and resumes and all these things. Now we'll all benefit from this, because it's like, okay, if we're in California, and I've said this numerous times, I have a lot of close friends in California that are multiple Michelin star chefs too. And we've kind of come together and created this whole California thing.
Yeah.
To what we feel now is the time for California to be recognized, like San Sebastian, Spain was at one time, and Japan is, and France wasn't it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it should, I think a lot of chefs from around the world are looking to California to see what we do. So the fact that San Diego now has multiple starred restaurants,
mm-hmm.
now when they come to California and they start up in Northern California and they make their way all the way down, it's not like, well, wait a minute, we don't really, maybe we'll go to San Diego, or maybe we'll start in San Diego and just eat at Addison and move our way up. Now they're like, no, San Diego is a place that we need to go, because there's Gina and Julie. And I mean, I think it's so, so amazing for the city.
Yeah. As of this newest upgrade, I mean, this newest star sprinkling, the star shooting down on San Diego, we have four. We have Soichi Sushi, Sushi Totokoro. We have Juna Jolie, and now you have two stars. I mean, do you think that this means that, like you said, it is great that the rest of the city is moving too? The problem that I've had with Michelin for a long time is that they didn't pay attention to San Diego. They treated us like the backwaters of California. It was largely ignored for a long, long time. And we knew that they didn't have the inspectors here. We knew that the people weren't actually kicking the tires on San Diego. And we knew we had you cooking, and we had a few other people cooking, you know, and it was frustrating for people who watched the media and rooted for you guys to see it ignored for so long. Do you think now with these four that this means that Michelin is making a real effort into, you know, staying here, into not just like coming down and giving you one star and be like, okay, we went to San Diego. Do you think that it means that they're invested in the city and that the city's truly on the rise?
100%.
Yeah.
I truly do. I think it's our time. And I think a lot of chefs and a lot of people, I started my career here in 1998. I mean, I remember when the chefs at that time that were big were, you know, Jean-Michel Diode and Bernard
Boyce.
James Boyce, who I worked for. I mean, he came from New York. I mean, these were... that's a long time ago, and to see where we're at now, and all the chefs, I thank you, all them to have paved the way for San Diego, and all the ones that want to come here and the ones that are here now. This is very exciting. The culinary landscape, you know, we're not known for, you know, it's funny, somebody for so many years always throw around the fish taco thing. I swear I'm putting a fish taco on that menu soon.
Do it.
It's coming. I've been working hard on this thing. I'm telling you, it's kind of like a little touche to all that stuff. Well, we kind of did something funny here recently. We have a chicken liver churro on the menu. Yeah, I mean, that's
nice.
We've wow. taken all the technique and all the flavor profiles and put this little bite on the menu that's literally tastes exactly like a churro, but it has squab, chicken, liver, like a moose in the middle of it. It is really, really something that catches you by surprise.
That's what I love about it. When I think of Michelin stars and I think about Michelin star type food, it's that surprising element of food. Yes. Chicken liver churro sounds gross, chef. It sounds absolutely disgusting.
I know you. David would have a few, and Marie, I know you would like them.
I'll get down with those any day of the week. Sure.
I mean, but you think about it, it makes sense. You think about if you ever had a foie gras and a sauterne, a glass of sauterne. There's like that, you know, that liver and the sweetness go naturally together. You get like, you know, a sort of reduction on a chicken liver mousse. You know, you get that sweetness. That makes total sense. But again, that's a surprise, you know.
Yeah, and I think that kind of, you know, speaks to where we're going. It's those little things that you can only get at Addison.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes those restaurants worthy of a detour or worthy of a special journey, is that kind of playfulness here and there. And it's something that you can only get where we're at. So,
I mean, Addison, obviously, I mean, maybe you, maybe your staff, maybe the restaurant itself. I mean, you know, you've worked on excellence for a long, long time, and it's proven itself, you know, fruitful, obviously. Yeah. But how does Addison improve? What needs to happen next?
You know, I think it's really about a sense of place. And enjoying the journey a little more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's to be, you know, we have to be on every single day. There's no day where you can be, you know, one thing we say is, you know, the customer can't pay for our training, right? Mm-hmm. Training, you know, just starting off with us. So that's one thing. I think what we have to continue to, dare to be different. I think we need to improve on that. That takes a lot of stamina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where we can really improve, where, you know, you might have people saying, you know, positive or negative things about what we're doing, and it's not really letting that in. It's really kind of just, you know, knowing where we are, enjoying the process, and know that, you know, some people might think a chicken liver churro might be insulting, but I think it's pretty cool.
Freaking delicious. Well, I mean, look, with a 2-star rating now, I think that you're going to automatically get the trust to pull off that caviar mint jelly. You know, I mean, they'll let you go for it, right? I mean, it'll be named after your daughter, you know?
Right. And I think that's what's so, I mean, if I could tell you some of the stories of when I first opened Addison, what people would say about some of the dishes, they were like, what? To where we are now, it's such an amazing process. So I think as long as the guests, I think they're looking at us now, what are you doing that's different?
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. I love that pressure, because your guests help you evolve too. And San Diego as a dining scene, you know, they've helped us out tremendously over the years. So it's great.
Nice.
To see them continue to push us in the right direction.
Yeah, because they start out and they're like, look, I just want a ribeye, all right? I want it, you know, I want it medium well with ketchup, all right? Just get it done, chef. You know, and now with 2-star Michelin, they're like, I want whatever's in your brain, man. Like, just create, right? So it does afford you a creative license, doesn't it?
Yes. It really does, Troy. You're absolutely 100% correct. It does. It really has changed that perspective. Like, how can we, you know, tastefully push a little more?
Yeah. And what do you think San Diego needs? I mean, San Diego's, oh, sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
No, and I don't want to sound like we're going to be doing anything weird or
right
wacky. Yeah. Cause I think that's really actually easy. It's very easy to be very strange and bizarre and put together things that you shouldn't be putting together just for the sense of attention. We don't want to do that. We want to really make sure it's thought through and it makes a lot of sense. And it's something that provokes, you know, that multi-sensual, you know, your senses are going, what is that? It reminds me of this, but it's this, it's got this texture, but it's got this temperature, you know, that all those different senses are going off. I think that's what makes a 3-star restaurant.
Okay, Chef. Well, I would just want to say this, that if you do get to the point where you just want to do something for attention, I have these very loud parrots right outside of my window in Ocean Beach. If you'd ever like to sous vide them for, say, 2 or 3
oh
days,
God.
I will. I'm just saying, Chef. Right? I'm just saying this. Hypothetically, I do not have any action against the OB parrots, but if they happen to end up on a menu at it. I'm just kidding. Okay, I'm going to stop there.
That was good. That was funny.
Apparently, they go really well with caviar and lamb jelly, too.
It is, right, David? I read about that in a cookbook somewhere. Chef, well, I just want to say congratulations. I know how long you worked. I know how hard you worked. I know you're a San Diego native who's really, you know, been like fighting for this city to, you know, kind of raise the bar a little bit. And I think that this definitely does. And I'm glad to see that Michelin is paying attention now and really, you know, giving credit where credit is due. And I hope that it continues to come and that people, you know, we attract more chefs because of it. We'd attract more visitors and everything else. So congrats, brother.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, you guys have been such a great supporter over many, many years. And you know, I look at it as a collective thing, journalism, marketing, PR, everything, what we put into the restaurant, how we're supported. It's really a unity to move a restaurant at this level. So thank you.
It's an ecosystem, man. Well, yeah. Congrats on your place in it, brother. Thank you so much for the time.
Take care.
Definitely.
I tried to get rid of you. We still have to do two people $50, Chef.
Yeah, we got to do two.
I'm so sorry. David, why don't you take over and just stop me from ruining the show? Thank you.
You ruined that a couple years ago, Troy. Marie, why don't you start us off this week?
Oh, I feel really put on the spot. I'm nervous now because the last place I ate out at was the food court inside 99 Ranch, which is actually very convenient because you go shopping and then you're just hungry and then you can stop inside and get something. You can eat there or you can take it to go. I went to the one over on Balboa. It's the newer 99 Ranch. And inside they have a Shanxi Magic Kitchen. They have a pho place, but it's just the Cantonese barbecue place that's inside. And they have the fried rice and the chow mein, and then they have dishes that rotate. So I just got that the last time. I don't even know the name of the spot inside the store, but the food court inside 99 Ranch, that's me.
I think that's our first food court mention ever on the Happy Half Hour. This is pretty exciting moment for us. And Chef, how about you?
I mean, I really have enjoyed over the years a lot of meals here, which I consider like a local restaurant because it's down the street from me here. But Ken's Sushi Workshop.
Okay, what do you get? Tell people who and what Ken's Sushi is and what do you get?
Yeah, Ken's Sushi. I mean, I basically go up to the counter there whenever I'm there, and he just puts things together that, again, he's very exciting, very dynamic guy, and the quality of the sushi that he does is, I really enjoy it because it's very approachable and fun, and he can really throw a party in there.
So, and you afford him the same creativity that other people afford you. You basically just say, whatever you got, Chef.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice. Omakase. All right. Well, me, I'm going to go up to Oceanside. Oceanside, two of my favorite people in the world are Roddy and Aaron Browning. They own the Flying Pig pub in Oceanside. And they expanded to Vista, tried to do like a Flying Pig pub too, and it didn't work out. They'll be the first ones to tell you that it just wasn't right for the part of town that it was in. But Flying Pig, the original, Flying Pig is so amazing because they found this like off the beaten path little place that had no love, was just discarded, kind of like San Diego has been for a long time in the food scene, you know, and they gave it love. And they gave it love, and they brought in like garage sale errata and vinyl records and figurines. And they had a good chef doing Southern food and doing it very simply, but beautifully. You know, it wasn't low fat food. It was full fat food. And it was, you know, like we had, you know, like
full fat's good. Full fat. Yeah,
absolutely. Full fat is good. So they have the full fat, you know, like pork chops and grits and, you know, hush puppies and everything else. Well, because the pandemic hit, they had to get rid of the Vista location. They actually got rid of their original Oceanside location, and they gave it over to Matsu, which is a great young chef who's aiming for a Michelin star himself, William Ike. He's doing a Japanese restaurant there. But Flying Pig just launched their own location on Mission Ave. So it's a right off the main drag. They're going to be an essential part of Oceanside for a long, long time. And I will tell you, they do a sweet tea brined chicken. It's smoked old school, meaning like chips underneath a pot. I mean, the lid of a pot smoking on the flat top, that sort of thing. And it tastes delicious. That sweet tea with the smoke is one of the best things. Then they take butternut squash from Roddy and Aaron, who own the place's garden. They roast it and they do it over like a, it's like, it's tzatziki, or you know, it's just like a garlic, lemon, mint yogurt over underneath this butternut squash. Fantastic. Flying Pig, new location, new like lease on life, and it's just kind of a place to hang out too. They've got a liquor license that'll go all night, and I kind of want it to be a hangout place where you can come and get a good old fashioned and not have to like, it's like a, you know, crazy bar scene. It's more of an adult place to hang out and have a good drink. So
I like how you see all that, and you got that Peloton back there. It looks good.
Jeff, that is the only reason I am here after the
burn off all the things I talk about. I burn off on that baby right behind me.
That's exactly what I do, man. I'm like, if you're going to eat this, you really deranged human being, you got to go home and get 20 minutes on that dang bike, man.
I'm impressed it hasn't become a laundry rack.
It hasn't become a laundry rack. It's kind of like a pillow fort right now, but you know.
I've been texting Marie and Troy pretty much. I feel like once every 3 days lately of nothing about pictures of fried chicken, just because this podcast and whatnot. So I've just been really eating a lot of fried chicken, and Streetcar Merchants is a place that I used to not really think was that great. And it has gotten so much better. It is really some of the best fried chicken in town, I think. I stay pretty basic with what I get. I get a 2-piece dark meat meal, and then I get the mac and cheese, and then the collard greens. If I'm feeling extra, I don't know, exciting, I'll sometimes on the occasion get the gizzards, even though most people won't eat them. Then one thing that no one really, I think, ever realizes about this place is they have a really, really, really good cocktail program. Like a whole bunch of really cool signature cocktails. One of my favorites is this one called Hand Truck Fuel that has a jalapeno tequila, watermelon, basil, shrub, cucumber, pomegranate juice, and like hit with some lemon too. I mean, wow. Really, really exciting stuff for what a fried chicken place would be. So go there. You might see me there watching some playoff baseball this week, because also it's like no one's sitting at the bar. Usually they're at the tables and I have the whole bar to myself and they just put on whatever baseball game I want.
You know, I love the fact that you said waterman instead of watermelon. Like, oh, you like masculinized that. It's like you put truck nuts on that word. That was really, it was really interesting.
I blame the monitors in my ear for that. I can't actually hear what
I was. I mean, gizzards are great. Gizzards, I mean, that's something. I went to some fried chicken places in Memphis, and that was like the specialty. I mean, gizzards are, you know, this where like, you know, chickens can basically swallow rocks, and the rocks like grind their food down for them, you know, and they kind of like jostle around in the gizzard. It is a delicacy, and it's really fantastic. Not too many people eat it, but then again, a lot of people won't eat chicken liver stuffed churros either, and those people, you know, need to kind of have a reawakening.
You know? I agree.
Missing out.
I need to come up just for those now, because now I'm like, I need to eat this. This is something that I need to experience. But
I Chef, do too.
Once again, Chef, thank you so much for joining us. Where is it even possible for people to make reservations anymore? And if so, what's the best place for them to make them?
Absolutely. I mean, so the best place in terms of, we released on Resy. We're on two platforms. We're on Resy and also OpenTable. So at the point, Resy is a month out. You can make reservations, and then Open Table, you can go all the way until the end of the year. I like that Open Table platform, because if you want to plan, you can have the planning a lot longer, but possibly in January, we might move to Talk. So we're in the process of doing that, but you can get most of your reservations through Open Table.
Awesome. All right, Chef. Well, thank you so much for your time, brother. I imagine that you've got some things to do in the kitchen. So, or maybe today's a day off. Is this today a day off for you?
No, today, Sunday, Mondays are. So I have some chicken livers to put in the churros.
All right, well, let's put some chicken liver in the churros. Start that slow ascent to joining your daughter in the 3-star Michelin ranks. And thanks a lot for coming on, brother.
Thank you. Be well.
All right. Cheers, man.
You can find Troy at Hey Troy Johnson on Instagram. You can email Marie at marietsdmag.com. And you can find me at David Eli Martin. And that's another happy half hour. We'll be back with you all next week.